Hey, it's that time of year for those of you, God forbid, you got to keep your New Year's resolution. What if you're a timeshare owner and you want to get out of your timeshare? Maybe that's at the top of your list, or maybe you made a bad investment over the years. It doesn't matter. Let not your heart be troubled, because the new year is also a reminder that you can get serious about getting rid of this timeshare and doing it right and doing it legally. And Lone Star Transfer is absolutely an amazing group of people. From beginning to end, I highly recommend, if you have any type of timeshare, I want you to contact Lone Star and tell them I told you to call. They'll give you a free, no obligation consultation, and they'll help get you out of your timeshare. They'll do it the right way, the legal way, and it will take very little effort on your part, just by calling #250 on your mobile phone and saying the keyword timeshare. That's #250 on your cell phone, keyword timeshare. You can check them out online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
You have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from iHeartMedia.
All right, glad you're with us. Great to be back in the greatest, best single country God ever gave man. I mean that with all my heart. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. Look, I've never done a lot of travel in my life, and I kind of cloister myself off when I'm on these trips because of I need the ability to stay on New York time, which is the only way I can do my job effectively, I think. And so that means closing all the shades. You look like you're, you know, a crazy person. You close the shades to the hotel room. And I just mentally just say, okay, what time is it? Well, it's 3 Eastern. It's radio time. Even though we were doing the show last week, it was 3 a.m. local time. A little weird when it's dark outside as you're driving to the studio, though. All right. So last week we had the entire Michael Cohen, you know, let's forget about world peace. Let's not schedule this. Let's schedule the Michael Cohen hearings, the 3 days the president is overseas in Vietnam trying to negotiate something that would be great for our kids and our grandkids, and that would be the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Let's do this. But then the Democrats, and I'm going to explain, they've now outlined their entire strategy for what the next 2 years is going to be like. And I want to go over this with you, because none of it is about what they should be about, and that is serving their constituents and serving the American people and making this country a better place. The whole idea of a public servant is that you are to serve others, those people that you make promises to, that you go out and fulfill your job. You want a better economy. You want more opportunity. You want more liberty. You want more freedom. You want the American dream available to yourself and your kids and your grandkids in a safe environment, because the world is safer, but not for them. That is not what the modern extreme radical Democratic Socialist Party is all about. They could have scheduled those Michael Cohen hearings anytime they wanted. The idea that on the morning the president is meeting Kim Jong-un first time publicly at this historic second summit, that in prime time on NBC cable and fake news CNN cable, they dedicated a whopping 12 minutes in prime time, over 400, nearly 500 minutes of cone coverage, says everything you need to know about what their agenda is. Because they're just an extension of all things radical, extreme, Democratic Socialist Party. And because I think that most Americans, you know, they want to create the image and the impression for the American people that this president is off his rocker. This president is not doing his job. This president's corrupt. This president did illegal things. This president is guilty, guilty, guilty by accusation. It's not unlike what they did to Kavanaugh, except it's a 3-4 year proposition now for them. They want to batter, bloody, beat down, crush, destroy the reputation of Donald Trump, because they think it's in their best interest to do so. And but the great irony about all of this is the fake fraud media mob telling you that the American people blame Trump for January's government shutdown and that President Trump is in the worst position often, but his poll numbers remain the same. You know, high 40s to low 50s. It doesn't move. They're only catering to this very radical extreme base of the Democratic Party. You know, Andy McCarthy put it very well in a piece that he wrote, sort of a summary of what came out of the Cohn hearings. And, you know, he points out, rightly so, electoral victory is subpoena power, meaning Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats took over the House. Could you imagine if they got the Senate? Donald Trump campaigning in Tennessee and in Missouri and in North Dakota and in Indiana and in Florida literally has prevented what would be more than this would be on steroids and human growth hormone, and it would be every second of every day. But the Senate is not going to go along with all of this, although Senate Republicans, some of them don't support the emergency declaration of the president. But I don't think it's going to be able. They're not going to. The president will veto it. They won't overturn the president's veto. So it will, in fact, go forward. Never challenged before by any other president, which is ridiculous. But so it seems like at every level, the Democrats have pretty much conceding that Trump-Russia collusion never happened, or at least Robert Mueller never found any evidence that any of this happened. And so, but now they just go to plan B, plan C, plan D, E, F, and G, and they're not even hiding it. They've been describing to you what they want to do if they get in power. If they win, they want us off fossil fuels, natural gas, and they want only clean energy. It would eliminate every car on the road. It would guarantee Americans, you know, a sustaining wage and family and medical leave and free vacations and health care for free and retirement for free and free college education, trade school education for free. You can't have your own private insurance. Everything's going to be free in this utopia. Eventually, we're going to get rid of, in 10 years, we'll be off all fossil fuels, the lifeblood of our economy. Never mind the hundreds and hundreds of thousands, actually millions of Americans that work in the energy industry. Now that for the first time in 75 years, we are energy independent. We have more natural gas, oil, coal, more energy than any country on the face of this earth. And if we'd only tap into these resources, we will be a massive net exporter of energy, which will create stability in the world rather than relying and depending on countries, some of whom have and continue to hate our guts for the lifeblood of what is the American economy, the engine of any economy. Nobody else in the world, I can tell you, is going to adopt this madness. China will surpass us. Every other country on earth will just roll over our economy. And the impact, the ripple effect worldwide will be a catastrophe if it ever becomes, if it ever gets implemented, which is what they want to do. Now, how do they do this? For Democrats to ever get their new Green Deal, they've got to win elections. Where they hid where they stood in 2018, they are now super vocal about it. They're the great champions of the new Green Deal. They're now saying that they agree with Ocasio-Cortez. They're now running on this madness, this push towards not even socialism at this point, which would be what is economic suicide? Promises and guarantees that they can never fulfill. So how do they get there? They got to get power back. How do they get their power back? Well, they're now, over the weekend, they're now actively telling people, this is the appetizer before the entree. The entree is impeachment. This is now what will be a daily, nonstop, death by a thousand cut strategy to destroy Donald Trump. Because Mueller didn't work. Trump-Russia collusion didn't work. So we go to plan B. Plan B is, well, we can't go to impeachment right away because that could backfire. And even Nancy Pelosi are saying they don't want to take up impeachment because if it's going to go nowhere, well, that means that, you know, we don't want to empower Trump and help Trump like it eventually helped Clinton. Axios lays out this slow bleed strategy, and the slow bleed is now we're going to have lengthy, nonstop public hearings. We already have, 80 some odd people that are being subpoenaed to now go testify before Congress. And their documents, a document search unlike any that has ever happened before in history. They're not serving the American people. They want to methodically pick apart every aspect of Donald Trump's life in the hopes that this fishing expedition will yield them something that they can then say, see, we got him. Or they'll come out with a daily dose of hysteria that they'll feed to their friends in the liberal media mob so they can go out there and claim such. You know, so what you have are coordinated investigations, 6 to 8 House committees. And what they're going to do is basically what we've had for 2 years, except they outsourced that, which never should have been, to Robert Mueller and the special counsel. But now we're going to have 6 to 8 House committees essentially from now until November of 2020. They're going to make every single working day a public trial against Donald Trump. They will go after anything and everything. Abuse of power, obstruction of justice, conflicts of interest, profits from the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C., money laundering. They're just going to make it up. And what the Democrats are doing is, they're not serving the American people, I can tell you that. The Democrats, they want to create a large, huge, massive, damning public record of testimony, documents, investigative reports, and they want to now use all of their time and energy to push for and lead to what will be in the minds, because the media will feed this every day. You know, it's just not worth it anymore. I'll take anybody but this. That's what they're doing. Many in leadership believe impeachment could get Trump reelected. Well, all of this is going to end up getting Trump reelected. You know, you got top Democrats now. You know, they're starting out. Listen to Jerry Nadler of New York. The investigation into, where is it? Trump obstructed justice. Now, this is interesting. He's already concluded the investigation before it starts. One of the reasons he cites is Jim Comey. We'll get to that in a second, but listen.
Do you think the president obstructed justice?
Yes, I do. It's very clear that the president obstructed justice. It's very clear. 1,100 times he referred to the Mueller investigation as a witch hunt. He tried to protect Flynn from being investigated by the FBI. He fired Comey in order to stop the Russian thing, as he told NBC News. He's intimidated witnesses in public.
If that's the case, then is the decision not to pursue impeachment right now simply political, if you believe he obstructed justice?
No, we have to do the investigations and get all this. We do not now have the evidence all sorted out and everything to do an impeachment. Before you impeach somebody, you have to persuade the American public that it ought to happen. You have to persuade enough of the opposition party voters or the Trump voters that you're not just trying
to steal. It's a very high bar.
Yeah. It is a very high bar that you're not just trying to steal the last to reverse the results of the last election. We may not get there. But what we have to do is protect the rule of law.
What a joke, because we even have the general counsel of the FBI saying that Hillary should have been indicted. But the irony here, he started out with a definitive statement. Trump obstructed justice. OK, where's the evidence? He says, well, he fired Comey. OK, let's listen to Comey's take on being fired and the president's right and ability to do so for any reason.
When I was appointed FBI director in 2013, I understood that I served at the pleasure of the president. Even though I was appointed to a 10-year term, which Congress created in order to underscore the importance of the FBI being outside of politics and independent, I understood that I could be fired by a president for any reason or for no reason at all.
Any reason or no reason at all. How's that obstruction if that's the case with anybody? And then you've got, of course, the biggest liar in Congress, Adam Schiff, who himself was caught on tape colluding with the Russians. All right, we'll get all of this in here. And I'm going to tell you what's at stake for you. Well, why does this matter to you? It matters to you because your life now, in the minds of Democrats, you come secondary. You're not their top priority item. Their priority item is to bludgeon Trump, bloody him up, so that they can get back power and they'll spend the next 2 years doing that rather than do anything that's going to make the lives of the American people better. What does that tell you about them? You know, there are more than 34 million American smokers. Now, I'd bet that finding a satisfying alternative to cigarettes is at the top of your list if you're a smoker. Look, I've been there before. But after many years of smoking, I finally made the switch to Juul. There's no more worrying about the way my clothes smell, worrying about what people are gonna say. With Juul, everything is so much easier. Now, Juul is a vaporizer that contains nicotine for a satisfying transition. When I found Juul, it was a complete game changer. Now, Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to cigarettes. From its simple to use interface to its clean technology, well, Juul has no cigarette ash, odor, or mess. So if you're one of the 34 million adults who smoke, know that there is an alternative to cigarettes. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's nothing like you've tried, visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. And warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. If you really read into this, what the Democrats are admitting here and what they must feel about it here is that Mueller's not giving them what they want. I mean, think, you know, one of the most aggressively anti-Trump Democrats, I guess many of them now, including, you know, Shifty Schiff, who is, and I'll get to him in a little bit in the next half hour, but they're now giving up on Robert Mueller. They don't think Mueller is giving them the impeachable evidence against Trump, that which they have hoped and prayed for. And Nadler saying that his panel is, we're now up to, I think, what, 80 Trump associates that are being subpoenaed and information requests. By the way, does anybody care at all that if you work for the government, that you get a subpoena, guess what is the next phone call you have to make? Oh, you've got to hire a lawyer. And those Washington, D.C. lawyers are not cheap. And, you know, I'm convinced to this day, I don't know for sure, that one of the reasons Hope Hicks left is she was probably paying more in lawyer's fees than she was ever making serving the country. Nobody's ever going to want to work in an administration if this is the atmosphere. Anyway, so Nadler actually said today that, well, we can't depend on the Mueller investigation for this. Mueller investigation number one, we don't know when it's ending, despite a lot of rumors, too. It's focused on specific crimes. So what he's basically saying is we don't have any faith in this. And they want to spend two more years a daily battering, bludgeoning, death by a thousand cuts strategy and not serve you, which I'll get to next.
From award-winning film and TV star Gary Sinise comes Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. This powerful memoir chronicles the inspiring, never-before-told story of Gary Sinise's journey from aimless teen to theater student to critically acclaimed actor and director, including his portrayal of Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump, which led to his life-changing mission as advocate and supporter for the men and women who put themselves in harm's way in service to our country. Read Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service by Gary Sinise. Available now wherever books are sold.
All right, glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. So let me just go back and lay the foundation here again and just tell you what's happening. Obviously, Democrats, and it's not just Nadler, as a strategy, have given up on the idea that the Mueller report is going to accomplish all that they have been saying it would accomplish the last 2 years. Now, let me tell you what else is going to happen simultaneously. The media, they're all going to do this transition. It's going to be Russia collusion, Russia collusion. Oh, Trump finances. Oh, Trump investigation. Oh, they're never going to go back and say that there was no collusion. They're never going to admit they were wrong. They're never going to admit that they've been lying and knowingly so for all these years. They're never going to say, well, what did we miss that? Well, maybe guys like Hannity were right now that we know the general counsel, the FBI under Comey, thought that Hillary should be indicted as it relates to the Espionage Act. We have new evidence today and newly obtained testimony that, in fact, the DOJ under Loretta Lynch was all over that investigation. In other words, that and we now have congressional testimony from Baker, Priestap, Lisa Page, and it all showed from the very beginning. This was in the Epoch Times. That, in fact, the Department of Justice reached a decision much, much earlier that impacted the Hillary investigation than anybody knew about. And they put a standard in place that's not the standard by law. For Clinton to be prosecuted, the DOJ required something above the law, a standard that made it 10 times more difficult to reach, and they did it to make sure that the candidate of choice was not indicted and charged as every other American would be. Because for that to happen, you know, the statute is very explicit as it relates to gross negligence. Remember, gross negligence was in the original exoneration being written in May before they investigated Hillary Clinton, and then they changed it to gross negligence. I'm sorry, extreme carelessness. Gross negligence is the legal statute. So what the new standard that we found out is that, according to this testimony, Lisa Page among them, is that they set it up that they had to be able to show intent. Now, these are the testimonies that were conducted last year behind closed doors, never publicly released, reviewed by the Epoch Times. And Page, who was Andy McCabe's special counsel during this time of this Clinton investigation, noted during her testimony that, quote, everybody talks about this as if it were the FBI investigation. She said the truth of the matter is there was not a single step other than the July 5th statement that Comey made on his own because she was compromised, meaning Loretta Lynch, that not a single investigative step that we did not do in consultation with or at the direction of the Department of Justice. Well, this was obviously being controlled from the highest levels of the Justice Department, because the fix was in. They didn't want to indict Hillary Clinton under any circumstances, though, even though it would have put every other American in jail. One standard of justice for the Clintons, one for the rest of America. And so what they did is they added this whole idea of intent. They made intent a requirement. Now, intent is a requirement of several statutes that the FBI was looking into, but intent was not specifically, is specifically not a factor under the charge of gross negligence contained in 18 U.S. Code 793, which John Ratcliffe brought up in these closed-door hearings. When you talk about intent, that's certainly true under 18793F, but it sounds like you just blew over gross negligence. In other words, they met the standard. The standard was there. Page responds, well, we actually didn't blow it over. In fact, the director, because on its face, it seemed like, well, maybe there's a potential here for this to be a charge. We had multiple conversations with the Department of Justice about charging gross negligence. And then she made clear that the DOJ decided that due to constitutional vagueness, a charge of gross negligence would not be supported without accompanying proof of intent. So they added this whole other layer of legal standard that would make it, you know, how do you get into somebody's mind in terms of when they commit a crime? It's sort of like a hate crime. So I've never been a big supporter of hate crimes legislation in the sense that, you know, you charge the person for the violence they commit, the horror that they do, and make it significant enough that it would cover whatever intent was below. You murder somebody, you murder somebody. Do you get a higher penalty based on what was in your mind at the time that you killed somebody? It shouldn't be. Remember, it became an issue, the James Byrd ad, the controversial ad in 2000. You know, it was like my father was killed all over again. A dragging death of an innocent man by these a horrible, brutal, evil act. Now, George Bush, who was running for president at the time, supported the death penalty for that case, which is the right thing to do. You don't murder people. But then he got criticized for not supporting the hate crime associated with it. Well, if you're getting the death penalty, it doesn't matter what you were thinking at the time of your evil, the evil that you committed. And it very likely in that case was deep-rooted hatred and racism. So this is now very interesting. So everything we have told you and the media will never get into is true, that they exonerated Hillary before they investigated Hillary. Hillary violated the Espionage Act. We know that the general counsel, that's the number one lawyer at the FBI, called Clinton's behavior alarming and appalling. And these folks should have known that this is classified. He basically was arguing that she should be tried. That's the general counsel. He had to get talked out of it, we now have discovered. And on a side note, by the way, top FBI officials acknowledged the struck page affair put the U.S. at a national security risk and did nothing at the time when they knew about it. You know, the irony of all of this is Hillary Clinton was complaining this weekend that the rule of law isn't being enforced. Wow, that's rich coming from her. And then beyond that, then if you're looking for Russian collusion, Hillary's foundation benefits $145 million in part because she joined people in allowing Russia to get a foothold in our uranium market. We had an FBI spy, William Campbell, reporting back bribery, extortion, kickbacks, money laundering, and still the deal was approved by the CFIUS board, of which Hillary had to sign off approval on. The people involved at that deal kicked back $145 million. Bill Clinton wanted to meet with the regulatory leaders of Russia at the time. He was being paid triple the amount of money that he would normally be paid for a speech. Didn't get to meet with them, but he did get to meet with Vladimir Putin at the time. Wow, Donald Trump never met Putin up to the time he was president. And wow, that kickback looks interesting. And why would you ever give up 20% of uranium when we don't have enough uranium and we have to import uranium, the foundational materials for nuclear weapons? And then about the Russian dossier that we now know she paid for. We now know Bruce Ohr warned everybody at the DOJ and the FBI at the upper ranks in August of 2016 that Hillary paid for it. It's unverified, uncorroborated, and Steele hates Trump. Well, Steele admitted under oath in an interrogatory in Great Britain. He had no idea if any of this was true. 50-50, maybe. Raw intelligence. Well, that raw intelligence became the bulk of information for the FISA warrant, violating the constitutional rights of Carter Page, a Trump campaign associate, but opening an entire door into all things Trump and the Trump campaign. Because that allows them, once they get in the door one way, they can go all through Trump's everything. Then that same dossier is used to bludgeon Trump, Trump-Russia collusion. Well, that's now dying. And Nadler and others are admitting pretty much it's dying. And all of that is happening right before our eyes. So now the new strategy is, all right, well, that's not going to work. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to do, well, let's go to Plan B. And Plan B now is 6 to 8 congressional committees, and all they're going to do is bludgeon Trump every second, every minute, every hour of every day moving forward. And they're not only doing it, you know, we got 80 people now subpoenaed. Who's going to pay their lawyers? 80 people, records requests. Why would anybody ever want to serve any president if this is the, we're now criminalizing political differences because what, Mueller didn't give you what you want. Now we're going to go into every other possible thing and we're going to make it all public. And we're going to basically make Michael Cohen of last week while the president's in Vietnam. We'll do that every day of every week. And then we had the declaration by Gerald Nadler. Oh, he already obstructed justice. Well, why have an investigation if you already know he did it? But you have 6 to 8 committees. They're going to put Donald Trump on public trial every single session that Congress is in now till November of 2020. And Democrats, are they thinking one bit about the economy? You know, the trade deal accomplishments of the president. He promised it's happening. The end of the regulatory nightmares stifling business creation in this country. 5.5 million new jobs are created. Do they care at all about Americans now that are getting off food stamps and getting back to work? Is there any service to the American people? 600,000 manufacturing jobs, 304,000 jobs last month. First time we've had a year of GDP growth at 3%. You know, Obama never did it in 8 years. Unemployment below 4% for eight months in 2018. Prior to 2018, unemployment had fallen below 4% only 5 times since 1970. Record low unemployment, African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment. Unemployment claims now have fallen to nearly a 50-year low under Trump. You know, you've got businesses now thriving in the country. And so what's this about for them? Well, it's about one thing. It's about accumulating power. And the way they think they can best accumulate power so they can institute their new socialist dream on America is by, you know, death by a thousand cuts called investigation. This is abuse of power on their part. There's nothing that they're talking about that's going to serve the forgotten men and women in this country or create jobs or make this country a better place. It's every second, minute, of hour of every single 24-hour day, every week, every month, every year. This will be the only president who's been investigated every second of his presidency. Listen to Adam Schiff, that there's direct and circumstantial evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. We've been hearing this forever.
Have you seen, do you have direct evidence of collusion with Russia?
Well, I think there is direct evidence in the emails from the Russians through their intermediary offering dirt on Hillary Clinton as part of what is described in writing as the Russian government effort to help elect Donald Trump. They offer that dirt. There is an acceptance of that offer in writing from the president's son, Don Jr. And there's overt acts in furtherance of that. That is the meeting at Trump Tower and all the lies to cover up that meeting at Trump Tower, and apparently lies that the president participated in. That, to me, is direct evidence. But there's also abundant circumstantial evidence.
Oh, let's go to real evidence. Remember the call? Adam Schiff? Hoaxsters? He thinks he's talking to Russians, and he thinks he's getting dirt from Russians on Donald Trump. He's colluding with Russians, and we've got the tape. Listen.
Okay, and so Buzova met with Trump in New York at some point after the 2013 Miss Universe
yes.
pageant.
Absolutely, and she got compromising materials on Trump after their short relations.
Okay, and what's the nature of the compromise?
Well, there were pictures of naked Trump.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so Putin was made aware of the availability of the compromising material?
Yes, of course. Buzova shared those materials with Sobchak, and Sobchak shares those materials with Putin because she's a goddaughter of Putin, and Putin decided to press on Trump.
And the materials that you can provide to the committee or to the FBI, would they corroborate this allegation?
Sure, of course. When they were in Ukraine, we got their conversation by the phone where they discussed those compromising materials. We are ready to provide it to FBI.
So you have recordings of both Sobchak and Buzova where they're discussing the compromising material on Mr. Trump?
Absolutely.
Sounds like Russian collusion to me. Doesn't that sound like Russian collusion, Ethan? Linda? Everyone's laughing. Of course it is. Imagine you had a tape of Trump saying, what dirt do you have on Hillary? What, you got dirt on Hillary? Give me the dirt on Hillary. We want the dirt on Hillary. What if it was just the opposite? It's such a bunch of hypocrites. Look, America's going to have to decide. You know, you're going to watch people that don't give a rip about the American people. This is power. This is their power. This is and if they get that power, we know the insane policies they've been advocating. It'll destroy, absolutely destroy the greatest opportunity society ever created by, given to man by God, that has saved more lives, that have advanced the human condition more than the United States of America. It is a complete opposite of everything we have and know and would be no cars. No, we're going to have high-speed trains, everything.
The takeaway is the president has a long way to go on all this, unfortunately, because now the Southern District of New York is involved. And involved, if you listen to Michael Cohen, quite heavily. He said he's in constant contact with them, says he's discussing things that he believes is criminal conduct on the part of the president with the Southern District, is not allowed to talk about it. Now, we don't know whether that's actual substantive stuff or not, and we don't know what the Southern District is doing. But Bob Mueller, I've said for 9 months, is not the person to worry about. The person to worry about, the people to worry about, are the prosecutors in Manhattan.
Why is that?
Because they have no restriction on what they can look at. Bob Mueller has to stay within the four corners of Russia. In Manhattan, they can look at his business, they can look at his personal life, they can look at the inaugural, which they're doing. They have no restrictions on what they can look at. And they have two tour guides now, Todd. They've got Michael Cohen and Rick Gates, the former executive director of the inaugural and his deputy campaign manager.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. That was former Jersey governor, prosecutor in his own right, Chris Christie, talking about beyond the Mueller report. Now, we went through a list, you know, so they are now beginning Act Two. And everything we predicted in the lead up to the election, Act Two is, okay, we'll spend 2 years and we'll lie about Trump-Russia collusion without any evidence. The Mueller report will be a dud. But let's go into every other aspect of Donald Trump's life. Let's subpoena every single possible thing as it relates to his finances, as it relates to any charitable contribution that he might have been involved in. Nothing is out of bounds, out of place. If it's not a witch hunt at some point, what else will you call it? When you've got literally now people, Gerald Nadler in particular, is what, we've got 80 people subpoenaed in a day? He's saying it's clear that the president obstructed justice. He's saying one part of the evidence is he fired Comey. Okay, here's Comey himself saying that the president has the right to fire him.
When I was appointed FBI director in 2013, I understood that I served at the pleasure of the president. Even though I was appointed to a 10-year term, which Congress created in order to underscore the importance of the FBI being outside of politics and independent, I understood that I could be fired by a president for any reason or for no reason at all.
So Comey himself admits it. Anyway, joining us now, John Sale. He's a former federal prosecutor. He served in the prestigious Southern District of New York, where he served as an assistant special Watergate prosecutor as well. David Schoen is a civil liberties and criminal defense attorney. Welcome both of you back to the program here. Let's start with the analysis of Chris Christie. John Sale, you know the Southern District of New York pretty well. A lot of huge, big name prosecutors have come out of there, probably the most prestigious in the country. What did you think of Christie's comments?
Well, one thing, Sean, I will say, almost everybody, if not everybody, who is an alumni of the Southern District is proud of that office. But one part of the clip that you did
Andy
not
Andy McCarthy's from there, and he ran the conviction of the blind sheikh. Rudy Giuliani's from out of there. A lot of big names.
Well, one part of the clip you didn't play of Governor Christie was he went on to say that when he was U.S. attorney, he learned that they're also called the Sovereign District of New York. And that's both good and bad. But I think when I served in other U.S. attorney's offices, I came to see that they really sometimes do their own thing. They do not write reports. So there has to be some concern. But what I am concerned about is if you have reason to believe somebody committed a crime, you need to investigate it, and no one's above the law. But if you don't start with that basis, if instead you say, here's an individual, and we're going to look at everything he's done in his entire life, there's none of us, myself, probably you, Sean, everybody, who they might not find something in your entire life that's very dangerous. And you shouldn't target a person. You need to just investigate real criminal activity. And it is true that the Southern District is not bound by any of those restrictions, and they don't write reports. But let me just say one thing, and it has to do with Michael Cohen. I've heard a lot of legal analysts, so-called legal analysts, say that, well, the president's an unindicted co-conspirator in the campaign finance violations. Well, first of all, it's arguable whether or not those violate the criminal law. But even if they do, it's a specific intent crime. And if what do they say, the corroboration for Michael Cohen? They showed a check. Well, if the president wrote a personal check to Michael Cohen, signed Donald T. Trump, that is no act of concealment. Nobody engages in a conspiracy, trust me, by writing a personal check.
Well, I think that makes a good point as well. Andy McCarthy, going off about what happened in the hearings last week, David Schoen, I think, you know, pointed out something I believe for a long time, that all of this, you know, use of subpoena power and the Mueller, you know, 2-year investigation, and now the House, quote, Oversight Committee and Schiff's Committee and the Intel Committee, you know, that really more than anything else is to create a atmosphere in which Donald Trump is rendered unelectable by innuendo and by accusations.
That's absolutely right. I mean, what would the purpose have been in calling Cohen last week, knowing that he's still cooperating with investigators and so that he can't really be fully cross-examined? It was just a farce. But, you know, you mentioned earlier in the show, the Nadler committee now Jerry Nadler's committee subpoenaing 80 people, etc. Listen, we know now that that's driven by his so-called special counsel investigators, Eisen and Burke, who he retained at taxpayer dollars. They've written a 168-page document indicting, convicting, and sentencing President Trump of obstruction of justice before they ever became so-called investigators. Their social media posts are all about how President Trump is guilty. This is not an investigation, and it shouldn't be taxpayer dollars paying for so-called investigators. They're absolute partisans. They have no business in this process. And I also have a concern that since they have a private lawsuit going under the so-called Emoluments Clause against the president, a lawsuit that that Eisen brought as the CEO of his organization and that Burke was counsel in, that case got dismissed, but they're cheering on the other Emoluments Clause cases. Are they going to use their position as professional investigators now for Congress to get discovery in their cases?
Oh, I think that's a great point, but as it relates to the obstruction investigation, I'm not sure exactly what it is that they're referring to because, and Andy pointed this out, that there, as far as we know, John, there was no cooperation agreement as it relates to the Southern District of New York and Michael Cohen. Is it feasible there's one that's going on without any formal agreement? Is this something they would ask Michael Cohen not to do, to not talk publicly about what might be an ongoing investigation?
Michael Cohen is on a book tour in order to sell his book. I read in the New York Times about a week ago that Michael Cohen declined to enter into a cooperation agreement with the Southern District. That is utter nonsense. They would not give him one because he declined to talk about all of his own misdeeds and his long pattern of criminal activity, which had nothing to do with the President of the United States. He is now trying to reduce his sentence and sell his books, and that's what this is all about.
And they were particularly harsh in their sentencing recommendation versus Mueller, who was less harsh.
Right, but remember,
not only were they harsh in that, in their sentencing memo, the Southern District said that it was not blind loyalty, but it was years-long pattern of his own deception, and he always attempted to minimize his own conduct. That's the Southern District talking about Michael Cohen. So he is a star witness for nobody.
David?
Remember this, vitally important. Under Rule 35 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, the government and only the government can make a motion to the court to reduce Michael Cohen's sentence all the way to zero. That's what he's working off of now. That motion has to be made within a year of his sentence, so he's in a hurry. Or if they can't use that information until after the year passes, they can make the motion then. But remember, he doesn't even want to have to show up in Otisville, let alone spend a long time there. So with or without a cooperation agreement, they have the unilateral right to make a motion asking the court to take his sentence down to zero. And you can be sure he's working as hard as he can. But what about the ethical considerations? There is no prosecutor there, and John Sayles certainly would not have taken, at the time, unethical information from a lawyer. Remember, there may be a waiver from the so-called crime fraud exception, but that's not a blanket waiver about everything Trump and his attorney Cohen discussed. Secondly, Cohen has continuing duties of loyalty to his client, whether he likes the client or not any further. And so he is there.
Well, wait a minute, but that's all gone. I mean, any attorney-client privilege here has been blown to smithereens, correct?
Well, it may be that Cohen has blown it, and there may be a waiver as to some of their discussions, but that doesn't give Cohen the right, and it certainly doesn't give the prosecutors the right to take that information.
Well, they that's
can't
a good
even
point.
Accept it.
Because we don't know of any crime fraud exception, John. I've got to believe that the president is the one that would have to waive attorney-client privilege, and there's no indication at all that he did here.
Well, only the client can waive. But remember, Cohen tries to compare himself, at least his public relations people, to John Dean. And there could be no less apt comparison. John Dean, who was the lawyer, unbeknownst to him, was being taped. Michael Cohen, the lawyer, was selectively taping his own client. Why on earth, a year or two ago, was he taping his own client? There's no jurisdiction in the country that wouldn't take away his license just for doing that.
Let me point out some words of Lynn Patton. And remember, her name came up in the hearing last week. Many of you already know that I considered Michael Cohen to be one of my very best friends. Countless people can confirm we were virtually inseparable during my employment at Trump, and that he is single-handedly responsible for introducing me to the Trump family and effectively changing my life. I'd be lying if I didn't admit that my heart still breaks for him and for his family, with whom I had grown extremely close. What many of you may not be aware of is the fact that I can personally confirm that the only person Michael Cohen turned on, the president of the United States, is because Mueller threatened to throw his wife in jail for up to 30 years, period. So she is the co-guarantor of the $20 million personal loan that Mueller discovered that Michael secured back in 2015 by falsely inflating the value of his taxi medallions, effectively making statements to the financial institution. Now, this goes to the heart, and I want to ask John first and then our criminal defense attorney second. One thing that bothers me about this whole process is these threats that are made to people. You know, like General Flynn goes bankrupt and they're telling him that, well, if you don't sign this agreement about lying to the FBI, even though the FBI didn't think at the time you lied to them, we're going to go after your son. We're going to go after your wife in this particular case, assuming everything Lynn is saying here is true. Are you giving, you'll get a reduced sentence, you'll get a get out of jail free card if you say what we want you to say, which Jerome Corsi was saying they were asking him to say things. I have a problem with this, John, that you're basically offering, if you offer somebody a get out of jail free card just to say what they want you to say, you're bribing them.
Well, just for the record, I am a criminal defense lawyer, and the only reason I say that, I'm saying it tongue in cheek.
Well, in your former job as a federal prosecutor, it seems that you're giving something of, you know, somebody's freedom. You can't put a price on it.
No. I just want to say I don't want my clients to think that I'm still a prosecutor. But no, the real answer is I see it every day, and the scary part about it is it's tempting. It's tempting to say what the prosecutors want to hear because you want to save your own skin, you want to save your family. And it's something in our whole system. We're talking about it because it involves the president, but let's put aside the president for a minute. It could happen to any one of us if a prosecutor wants to target us. It's dangerous, and the system should be reexamined so that incentive to lie is taken away.
Yeah. David, we'll get your reaction to that when we get back. Quick break. More with John Sale, former federal prosecutor, having served himself in the New York Southern District, and assistant special Watergate prosecutor David Schoen, criminal and civil defense attorney. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, we continue on now the fallout, Michael Cohen's testimony, and now the endless, but yeah, I predicted all of it, investigations, subpoenas, nonstop by a party obsessed with destroying a duly elected president. They're not obsessed about doing their job, which is serving the American people, as evidenced by the 80 subpoenas and document requests that went out today by Jerry Nadler and, you know, Shifty Schiff and all that his nonsense. He basically wants to redo the Mueller investigation because they're not going to get the result that they want. John Sale, David Schoen is with us. You know, this thing of value the prosecutors offer individuals that they've gotten in their net, for example, well, I'm just going to go after your wife. I'm just going to go after your kids. Well, listen, I'll recommend no jail time if you cooperate and tell us A, B, or C about this person. In the case, you know, it gets serious when you're offering something of value like freedom if it's the president of the United States, David Schoen.
I will consider the imbalance all around. Besides the fact that the government has all of the resources on its side in the first place and unlimited time to investigate, in this case, it's the government that decides whether the defendant, now a cooperating witness, is telling the truth. Only the government. So if that witness tells the truth, the government wants to be the truth, then that person gets the benefit and the threat is removed. Otherwise, they're still under that threat. This is a common threat, and especially by a person like an Andrew Weissman, who's made a career out of threatening other family members. Some courts in the past have tried to cut back on this kind of thing, but it hasn't worked. So think about it. If a defendant or a defense lawyer tries to talk to a witness the government doesn't want him or her to talk to, that can be called obstruction of justice. It's uneven playing field all around.
All right. I want to thank you both. John Sale, David Schoen, thank you for being with us. When we come back, Eric Bowling checks in. We'll talk about the news of the day. He is in Vegas. He has another opioid summit with the First Lady. We'll talk about that much more. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number.
When I see these people And they're good people, some senators, mostly. I tell you, the House has been fantastic. The House, the backing we've had from the House has really been, I'm talking about in the last short period of time, there's a lot of spirit in the House. And I think in the Senate, too, but we're going to have to see because we have a vote coming up. And a lot of people talk about precedent, that if we do this, the Democrats will use national emergency powers for something that we don't want. They're going to do that anyway, folks. The best way to stop that is to make sure that I win the election. That's the best way to stop that. They're going to do it anyway. They'll do it anyway. I watch them. Good people. They're friends of mine. We're very concerned with setting precedent. That's precedent, not president. Precedent. We're very concerned about setting precedent. I'm very concerned with having murderers and drug traffickers and drugs and drug cartels pouring into our country. That's what I'm concerned about. And the Democrats, they're going to do whatever they do if they get into power, and it won't have a damn thing to do with whether or not we approve our national emergency. Because let me tell you, they don't like it when I say it. But we are being invaded. We're being invaded by drugs, by people, by criminals, and we have to stop it. And we want people to come in, as I said before, but they have to come in legally and with merit. Previous presidents have used their national emergency power to promote democratic elections in Belarus, to ensure political stability in Burundi, and to defend the sovereignty of Lebanon. And you know what? That's okay. Lebanon, it's good. Fine. Use it. But we need it right here in our country. We have to use it for our country. Many emergency declarations have been used to protect people in faraway nations and distant lands. Now we are protecting, finally, our people.
All right, that was the president in what became a marathon speech for him over 2 hours at CPAC over the weekend. Glad you're with us back in New York, by the way. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Hannity tonight, we got a great show, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. You know, all the things the Democrats say they wanted, Eric Bolling is joining us, CRTV, and he's going to tell us about an upcoming opioid event that he has with the First Lady. The president pointing out, yeah, that too is a real emergency, all connected to the open borders problem we have. You watch the president. The president only wants to solve problems. Now we've got a list a mile long of subpoenas, endless, reckless investigation, the things they supported, like border control and building walls and DACA and Dreamers. And I thought they cared about Me Too and allegations of sexual assault. People to be believed, but not if you're the lieutenant governor of Virginia. A lot of phoniness on their part, Eric Bolling.
Sean, thank you so much for bringing me back on. That was an amazing 2-hour speech. President Trump was in his element. He enjoyed that crowd, conservative, young conservative crowd. And you know what was really impressive is how much they enjoyed him, too. It was just masterful. I mean, you know what? Yesterday proved that speech shows exactly why Donald Trump is President Trump. He just relates to people, and they relate to him as well. I was thrilled with that speech, and frankly, I was thrilled with his message to those young people on drugs and opioids and fentanyl, which is killing too many of us and too many of them.
You know, the sad thing is, I know this has now become a passion in your life after what happened to your son, he was a victim of this, and you've been doing a series now of these town halls, including I think the First Lady and most of them. I believe Becky and Jerry Falwell Jr. have been a big part of it as well. And also other family members that you have run into along the way, and their kids are dying because of these drugs that are crossing the southern border. Fentanyl, number one, and 90% of our heroin, number two. How that is not a national emergency, that in and of itself, forgetting the homicide numbers and the sexual assault numbers and the, just basic assault numbers.
So, Sean, we started this in November, end of November of last year, and the First Lady kicked it off with us at Liberty University. It was fantastic. We went to Asheville right after that, and we did another one, and we got a call the next day after the Asheville town hall. We're going around the country, And a lady called us and said, I watched the program last night. You saved my life. I watched it and I changed my life around, turned my life around. And it, for that moment, I think the first lady was just really struck by it. She is going to be tomorrow, just to let people know, this is really important. We're in Las Vegas right now. I'm on a stage, a Las Vegas stage right now, at the Westgate Theater. And she's going to be the first 20 minutes of an hour show that's open to the public. She is gracious enough to open the doors to this place and say, come, let's talk about opioids, because it's a big part of her Be Best initiative. And so we want to make sure everyone knows about the event, but also comes out, Sean, because it's free. It's open to the public at Westgate tomorrow at 1 Las Vegas time. It's really been amazing working with her. I will tell your audience one other thing. I've called Sean Hannity a handful of times and said, Sean, you know, I lost my son. My son died of an accident.
By the way, his son was Chase. He was a great kid. Really was not a big drug user at all. He had bought a Xanax, which is an anxiety reducing medication. It's, you know, usually prescribed, and he bought it somewhere else than having it prescribed from a doctor, and it ended up being laced with fentanyl.
And he passed that night, and I've spent the last year and a half grieving, crying, reliving the tragedy. But I called Sean Hannity a handful of times, and Sean, we're doing a town hall and we're trying to get the awareness out there and save some lives, and Sean says, absolutely no problem. Here's the time for you to come and talk about it. So, Sean, believe it or not, you're absolutely part of saving lives in America.
Listen, Eric, this is too serious. One of the things you always say, and I've watched you in interviews and speeches and on your own show, you always say, don't think it can't happen to you. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we're losing 300 kids on average a week from this stuff, and we got to start with prescription drugs. I don't have a problem with prescription drugs. And I know some people have horrible pain, and there's ways to alleviate pain. And there is a place for opioids. There's a place for Vicodin, Percocet, OxyContin. I've never taken one of those pills in my life. They scare the crap out of me because I know too many professional adults that have gotten addicted. But then they leave it in their medicine cabinet. They take the 2-3 pills. They get over the hump of the real pain, and they don't want to take anymore, most people tell me. But if they leave it there, then their kids get a hold of it. Next thing they know is they're addicted. Then they're out on the streets. They're paying $80 a pill. And then they find out that the high is even greater if you try heroin. And the next thing you know, instead of $80 a pill, they're paying $10 a bag, and God only knows what's in that thing.
Yeah. So let me just. So you said 300 kids a week are dying. It's honestly, it's far worse than that. It's about 200 a day. It's 200 a day, Sean. It's like flying a plane into a mountain every single day, and everyone dying on board. So I'm here, you know, Fox host. I've written 2 best-selling books. I'm here. David Siegel owns this place called the Westgate in Las Vegas. Used to be the Hilton, and he lost his 21-year-old daughter to an overdose as well. And so the point you make is it can happen to you too. You can absolutely happen to anyone. Since I've gotten involved in this, Sean, I can't believe how many people have come up to me and said, you know, when I heard about it, I thought of immediately go to heroin or some awful thing like that, or a needle in someone's arm. But it's the crisis next door. So many people know someone who either died of an overdose or is struggling, and they're worried about them dying, whether it's a family member, friend. It doesn't matter your socioeconomic position, how rich you are, poor you are, gay, straight, white, black, male, female, athlete, not. You're going to get touched by it, and it's a national epidemic, and thank God the First Lady, the White House, and people like you, Sean, are helping the cause.
You know, I don't understand... And maybe this goes to the heart of what we're watching. I laid out earlier in the program what is a roadmap to waste everybody's time. Now that it appears their Trump-Russia collusion two-year conspiracy theory lie is falling apart of its own weight, well, now they're just going to get into, well, the president did this, and let's see the president's taxes, and let's go on a fishing expedition. And, you know, now they're sending out subpoenas to basically everybody. And let's throw up, you know, let's wet some paper, throw it up against the wall, and see what might stick at some point. All right, as we continue, Eric Bolling has this opioid summit with the First Lady tomorrow. It's at the Westgate Vegas Resort and Casino. As we continue now with Eric, one of the major reasons I support the president's emergency declaration on the wall is to stop these drugs from coming across our borders. You know, every small town, every small city, every big city is now dealing with this problem. And, we're losing too much of our nation's treasure in, you know, all over the country. It's got to stop. This is something that is preventable.
Yeah, it's preventable. It's certainly able to be certainly made better. And absolutely the first line has to be stop the flow. And as you pointed out earlier, 90% of the heroin and some of the most dangerous opioids on the face of the planet, 90% of that whole volume comes through our southern border to be distributed in the United States. That is just insanity. We consume 90% of the world's most deadliest drugs here, and the vast majority of that comes through our southern border. Are you going to stop it all? No. But if you stop some, guess what you're going to do? You're going to save some lives. Period. Well, it's straight arithmetic.
Listen, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of people, more than I'd like to know, that have lost kids, and a lot of them never recover. And I've watched you go through this process. Obviously, there's not a day you open your eyes and you don't think about what happened with Chase. While you're helping others save lives, I in some ways, it's got to be somewhat therapeutic for you to know that, well, I'm going to try and prevent other parents from going through the horror and the pain and the misery that I've been through and I live with every day.
It's not. I wish it were therapeutic, but I will tell you, we've done about 10 of these town halls, Sean, and then, you know, you got to go out on the road and promote them a little bit before to make sure people are aware of it, because the more awareness is better. But every single time, it's like ripping my chest open and pulling my heart out of the front of my body to recount the story of the night that Adrian and I received that call, that every parent's nightmare.
You were on the road. You were driving. Yeah. And you got a call from a friend of your son's.
My son's friend was Kaylee, and she's crying, and I recognize the number, and for some reason the only thing I said to Kaylee at the time was, "Is he still alive?" And she said no. And as my wife heard, it was on speakerphone. She literally opened the car door, stopped, and she fell onto the roadway crying. And I had to go and pick her up and gather her. And we sat at the roadside on a curb for 2 hours crying. So before I get too emotional, we want everyone to Sinclair's broadcasting this. This is going to be phenomenal around the country, all their stations. But come on out. It's free. It's open to the public. Just come out 1 p.m. Las Vegas time local at the Westgate Arena.
So it's at the Westgate Vegas Resort and Casino. That's on 3000 Paradise Road in Vegas. It's well known what's going to be there. Now, I know the First Lady will be there. Wayne Newton, I understand, is going. Jerry Falwell and Becky Falwell will be there. Is my understanding. It's free, and it's for the first 1,500 people, I guess, to confirm or to just show up.
To show up. Just come on up. Just show up. You know, the doors will be, Secret Service will be here, but just show up. And the DEA administrator flew in for this too. You know, and they'll talk about some of the things that they want to do. So it's a big event. You know, it's a big event. We hope a lot of people show support for the First Lady, because she's a very busy person. For her to take time out of her schedule and her Be Best initiative to come and, you know, talk to people, and she realizes how big of an issue this is. And so let's support her too by getting a big, big crowd, big pro Trump crowd.
Well, listen, Eric, I love you for what you're doing. You're a dear friend, and no parent, as you said, this can happen to anybody, and every parent needs to know this. But I know it's every parent's fear, because I have too many friends. We all have kids and we're all scared to death, and it gets worse as they get older. And, you know, then you send them off to college, then you're really nervous. And what you are describing, everyone has to take seriously, because this is happening. So it's at the Vegas, Westgate Vegas Resort Casino, and it's tomorrow, 1 p.m. local time, 4 p.m. on the East Coast time. The First Lady will be there. Of course, Eric will be there. Jerry and Becky Falwell will be there, and others, Wayne Newton. Tell him I said hello. I haven't talked to him in a while, okay? And our very best, and I hope a lot of people...
A good pro-Trump conservative who happens to be, you know, Mr. Vegas for 50 years. He's seen the...
Yeah.
And I wanted to bring him on because
that's awesome.
He's seen the drug culture change.
He's a good man. All right, so are you. Eric Bowling, thanks for being with us. 800-941-SEAN. Toll-free telephone number. You don't think that's a national emergency? Try and live through that. You know, and everybody listening to my voice right now, you know somebody that's had to deal with this. You know somebody that is in the grips of addiction, some type of addiction. We all know somebody like that.
Stay right here. for our final news roundup and information overload.
Does the Green New Deal go too far?
No. You cannot go too far on the issue of climate change. The future of the planet is at stake. Okay? We have, according to the best scientists in the world, we have 12 years to begin substantially cutting carbon emissions before there will be irreparable damage to the planet.
And when I look at what's happening on the other side, I encourage it. I say, I think the New Green Deal, or whatever the hell they call it, the Green New Deal, right? Green New Deal. I encourage it. I think it's really something that they should promote. They should work hard on. It's something our country needs. Desperately, they have to go out and get it. But I'll take the other side of that argument only because I'm mandated to. I meant it. But they should stay with that argument. Never change. Never change. No planes. No energy. When the wind stops blowing, that's the end of your electric. Let's hurry up. Darling? Darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch television, darling.
You could just see how cathartic that two-hour-plus speech is as it relates to the president. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. There's just no end to, you know, the... It's just no end to any of this. You know, the fact that there's so many Democrats that bought into this, it is easy to laugh at the idea that we are going to get rid of oil and gas. It's funny to laugh at the idea that we're going to get rid of cars as we know it with plug-in stations everywhere. That the idea, we might not be able to do it in 10 years, but in 10 years, we're going to be off all natural gas and oil, the lifeblood of our economy. We're going to transition off of that. And in the meantime, too, we're working to get rid of airplanes and cows because of the flatulence and the impact of the CO2 gases. It's funny, but they're serious. You know, I'm watching last night on 60 Minutes, of course, the extension of all things socialist, Democrat, extremist. And they've got a kid that's 11 years old, actually a very sweet kid. I mean, and I understand, you know, people have their points of view and they tell their kids about it. And their kids, you know, tend to adopt the value system of their parents and, you know, suing the federal government. We'll see how far that lawsuit goes. But it's been going on for, I think, 4 years, if I remember. I was half on the phone most of the time. But so I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, I get it. Let's push the New Green Deal and let's try and indoctrinate every American into the idea that we're going to do this regardless of anything the rest of the world does, even though we have done more than any other country to eliminate CO2 gases from and clean our air than any other place on earth. You should see people in Vietnam when I was there last week. What were they doing? They all had masks on. The air quality is atrocious there. Same in China. People are wearing masks everywhere. And as the rest of the world will stay on the lifeblood of their economy, gas and oil, this fantasy that we're going to have high-speed trains and no cars and no combustion engine and no more gasoline is an economic disaster, while simultaneously we're going to offer everybody everything for free. But while they push the fantasy on the one side, they're bludgeoning Trump on the other side. And this has now become 24/7, nonstop, hate Trump, conspiracy to conspiracy to conspiracy theory. And it looks like as the Mueller report winds down, they ratchet up. Here come the subpoenas. Here come the document requests on the same topics, the same issues, and expand it out as far as possible with as wide as net a possible, all in an attempt to bludgeon this president. How does any of this serve the American people? And when you start looking at it from the perspective, well, what are we going to stop here? You know, I'm reading Axios from earlier today, and they're giving away their entire agenda. They worry impeachment proceedings may backfire if they move too fast. So we're planning now to pursue a slow bleed strategy, lengthy, non-ending Michael Cohen days, public hearings, scores of witnesses to pick apart President Trump's finances now, post the failed Russia collusion narrative that they're pretty much confident isn't going to happen, which means they knew the whole time that it wasn't going to happen. Anyway, so they'll begin an investigation. They'll coordinate it among 6 to 8 House committees, and Trump will essentially be on public trial for the next 2 years leading up to the next election cycle, you know, and spending every second, every minute, every hour of his presidency having to also deal with this crap on the side and meeting with lawyers every day and strategizing abuse of power, obstruction of justice, conflicts of interest, and money laundering. What do you mean money laundering? And this is what they want to do. They're stating this. They want a large, damning public record of testimony, documents, investigative reports that they'll be leaking out every day anyway. And because they know that Pelosi and other top Democrats don't want to take up impeachment if it's going to go nowhere in the Republican-controlled Senate. So now it's a death by a thousand cuts strategy. So with massive amounts of time and energy and resources, they're not serving the American people at all. You know, one House leadership figure quoted as saying many in leadership believe impeachment can help Trump get reelected. Instead, we're going to pivot the anger to defeating him on the campaign side next year. And the last thing we want to do is help Trump like it eventually helped Clinton. OK, but that doesn't factor in the new radicals in their party. So they're opening, you know, any area of possible investigation into Donald Trump's life. And that means the White House is not going to cooperate with any of this, nor should they cooperate with any of this. This isn't oversight. This is a fishing expedition. This isn't serving the American people. This is serving themselves. This is all done so they can regain political power. This is all done at the cost of all of the president's success that he has had in just 2 years. You know, look at the economy alone. You know, 5.5 million new jobs created. You know, look at last month, 304,000 jobs created, you know, 3% GDP over the last 4 quarters, job openings exceeding the number of unemployed people for the first time. We have more jobs than we have people unemployed. Unemployment below 4% for 8 straight months in 2018. You know, prior to that, unemployment had fallen below 4% only 5 times since the 70s. And then, of course, break it down demographically. African-Americans, Asian-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, unemployment rates falling to, you know, record lows in 2018. Unemployment insurance claim, you know, falling to a near 50-year low under President Trump. President has brought back manufacturing jobs that were never, ever coming back, like 700,000 of them. You know, it's a massive economic turnaround. And the people that have and are benefiting the most are those Americans that were left behind in the Obama years. Why? Because we see millions leaving the food stamp lines and millions leaving the poverty rolls and now getting jobs and now improving their lives, which is good for everybody. Business is now thriving. It's now become a business-friendly country again, although, you know, I've got to believe in the back of the minds of some of these business people that are thinking, all right, that's good for now. What's going to happen if Trump leaves one day? We're going to go to the new Green Deal and destroy all industry, all business, because that's what they're proposing. And I can tell you predictably what's going to happen if that ever occurs. They're all going to leave, not just California, New York, and New Jersey. They're going to leave the United States, and they're going to build their businesses in more friendly countries. And they'll create the jobs and the economic opportunity there. You know, you get rid of 12 regulations for every new one we took in 2018, surpassing the president's pledge to cut 2 regulations for every new one, $33 billion in net regulatory savings because we're not regulating businesses to death. You see workers seeing the largest nominal year-over-year wage growth in nearly a decade. And for, you know, the African Americans, Hispanic Americans, their poverty rates have now hit an all-time low. More than 6 million workers got bonuses, pay raises, increased benefits in response to President Trump's tax cuts. The average family of four earning $75,000 will keep $2,000 more of its own money. Now, you know, I know people in states like New York, they're not that happy with it all. Why should they be? But why have all the other states that don't elect socialist redistribution big spending governors like Cuomo in New York, you know, why should those states subsidize a tax benefit that only benefits people that get taxed in their states. Let's force the people in these states to elect people that have low taxes, better infrastructure, better governance, less redistribution. You know, I'll end up paying more, but it's not the president's fault. You know, I don't think people in Florida, Tennessee, and Texas ought to be subsidizing the fact that I was, up to this year, allowed to deduct my state and city and local taxes. Because they don't have that problem in those states, because they elect smart people that don't bring state income tax into play. And as a result, they're gaining population every year by hundreds of thousands. And all these high-taxed, highly regulated states, New York, California, New Jersey, Illinois, Connecticut, they're losing population, tens and tens of thousands every year. The New York governor complaining about $2.3 billion in a shortfall for the state coffers this year. Well, if he'd allow fracking on upstate New York, you could probably eliminate the state income tax in New York, create hundreds of thousands of high-paying career jobs for people, revitalize a part of New York that has been economically depressed now for decades, and also add to the energy boom that New York is being kept out of for no other reason except, the governor decides he doesn't like it. By the way, we have new information as it relates to the deep state. There's a long, lengthy expose by Epic and the Epic Times, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And it shows that newly obtained congressional testimony by former top FBI officials Baker, Precept, Lisa Page, shows that early on in the FBI's investigation of Hillary's unsecured email server, that the Obama DOJ issued an edict that virtually guaranteed that Clinton would never be prosecuted. And what they managed to get their hands on behind closed doors is these accounts from Baker, Priestap, and Page, and it shows the lengths to which Loretta Lynch's DOJ went to make sure that Hillary would never be charged. And early in the Clinton email case, the Department of Justice reached a decision that would have far-reaching implications in the FBI's investigation into the Clinton use of this private server. The Justice Department under Loretta Lynch decided to set an unusually high threshold for prosecution of Clinton, which pretty much ensured from the outset that nothing was ever bad going to happen. For her to be prosecuted, the DOJ required the FBI establish evidence of intent, even though the gross negligence statute explicitly does not require this. So she's rewriting the laws on her own. And that means the FBI would have needed to find a smoking gun, like an email or an admission made during an FBI questioning revealing that Clinton and her aides knowingly set up the private email server to send classified information. Well, of course, they did it knowingly anyway. They knew what they were doing. They didn't want congressional oversight. And the testimonies were conducted last year behind closed doors. They haven't publicly been released, but they were reviewed for this article. Lisa Page, the FBI lawyer friend of Peter Strzok, was the special counsel to the deputy FBI director, Andy McCabe, during the time that the Clinton investigation was going on, noted during her testimony in July of 2018 that the DOJ was intimately involved in the investigation. She said, everybody talks about this as if it was the FBI investigation, and the truth of the matter is there was not a single step other than the July 5th statement. There was not a single investigative step that we did not do in consultation with or at the direction of the Justice Department. That's pretty damning to me. And former FBI Director Comey also hinted at the influence exerted by the DOJ over the Clinton investigation in his July recommendation, stating that there are obvious considerations like the strength of evidence, especially regarding intent. So he took the exact words of the then the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. Remember, it's a matter. He took that and he didn't look at that as some type of obstruction, only something President Trump could do. Now, intent is a requirement of a federal statute that the FBI was looking into, but specifically, it, you know, is not a factor under the charge of gross negligence. U.S. Code 793, a fact that was brought up by John Ratcliffe during Page's testimony, because Ratcliffe said, OK, I think when you talk about intent, that's certainly true under Part 18, 793F, but it sounds like you all just blew over gross negligence. That charging her was not appropriate because we could not establish a beyond a reasonable doubt. We, the government, could not establish beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the intent. Of course she had the intent. And they knew she had the intent. And the problem is that the intent was just out there.
We'll do everything we can to get whatever evidence. We are starting this investigation. We will, tomorrow, we will be issuing document requests to over 60 different people and individuals from the White House to the Department of Justice, Donald Trump Jr., Alan Weisselberg, to begin the investigations, to present the case to American people about obstruction of justice, corruption, and abuse of power.
So that would include John Kelly, the former chief of staff, Don McGahn, the former White House counsel?
I would imagine. I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, but we will be releasing the list tomorrow of over 60 entities, people, et cetera.
How about if Robert Mueller comes back and says definitively, we find no collusion by President Trump? Is that a conclusion you'll accept?
Well, we'd want to see the evidence behind that and see the validity of that, and we could agree or disagree. But this investigation goes far beyond collusion. We've seen all the democratic norms that we depend on for democratic government attacked by the administration. We've seen attacks on the freedom of the press, the press called the enemy of the people. We've seen attacks on the Department of Justice, attacks on the FBI, attacks on judges. All of these are very corrosive to liberty and to the proper functioning of government and to our constitutional system. All of this has to be looked at, and the facts laid out for the American people.
Do you think the president obstructed justice?
Yes, I do. It's very clear that the president obstructed justice. It's very clear. 1,100 times he referred to the Mueller investigation as a witch hunt. He tried to protect Flynn from being investigated by the FBI. He fired Comey in order to stop the Russian thing, as he told NBC News. He's dangled he's intimidated witnesses in public.
If that's the case, then is the decision not to pursue impeachment right now simply political, if you believe he obstructed justice?
No, we have to do the investigations and get all this. We do not now have the evidence all sorted out and everything to do an impeachment. Before you impeach somebody, you have to persuade the American public that it ought to happen. You have to persuade enough of the opposition party voters, or the Trump voters, that you're not just trying
to steal. It's a very high bar.
Yeah, it is a very high bar, that you're not just trying to steal the last election, to reverse the results of the last election. We may not get there. But what we have to do is protect the rule of law.
Do you have direct evidence of collusion with Russia?
Well, I think there is direct evidence in the emails from the Russians through their intermediary offering dirt on Hillary Clinton as part of what is described in writing as the Russian government effort to help elect Donald Trump. They offer that dirt. There is an acceptance of that offer in writing from the president's son, Don Jr. And there's overt acts in furtherance of that. That is the meeting at Trump Tower and all the lies to cover up that meeting at Trump Tower, and apparently lies that the president participated in. That, to me, is direct evidence. But there's also abundant circumstantial evidence.
All right. So first you heard on Gerald Nadler, 60 document requests, is now up to over 80 to Trump people organizations. The investigation goes far beyond collusion, obstructing justice. He fired Comey, which even Comey admitted he had the right to do. You know, and then we got Adam Schiff. He's doing his thing. There's a direct circumstantial evidence on Trump-Russia collusion. It's never going to end. Bludgeon, 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 but don't do your job and serve the American people. They don't care. And why not? What are they looking for here? What is the goal here for them? The goal is to beat, batter, bludgeon, and bloody as best they can politically to try to make the president unelectable at a minimum, and try to put together some whatever, anything that might stick so that they can impeach the president. They don't care about you. They do not care one whit about the American people. They're not serving the American people in this. They weren't a part of Trump's success. They're threatened by it. They just want their power back. And if they get it, telling us what they're going to do with it. And if they do that, that's horrible for the country. And as we've been discussing. All right, let's get to our phones as we say hi to Victoria's in Florida today. Victoria, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. I just wanted to call and let you know, as a former liberal Democrat from New Jersey, I now live in Florida, and I have to honestly say you've opened my eyes. I am sincerely disgusted with the Democratic Party. I feel like totally dismayed. I can't even... I'm just angry about it. And everything that you just said a moment ago, I totally agree with. I had to give President Trump the benefit of the doubt when he first got elected. But hey, he's done an awesome job. He's put his money where his mouth is. And I am so proud of him. And I will vote for him next year. Plain and simple.
Now, what made you not like him? And what makes you now like him?
Well, you know, before he became the presidential nominee, it was more like, you know, he was just very arrogant on the TV shows, the way he was depicted and all that stuff like that. And then I'm like, well, you know, he's a business guy. Maybe it's just all about business. But then when he started saying what he felt and putting his actions where his mouth is, I was like, wow, these Democrats don't want to do that. They just want to keep their paychecks and they don't want to do anything. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I just, you know, I have to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. That's just me. And ever since then, I started liking him more, man.
Just you know, far. Look, I will say this. The guy's fighting. The country's better off. The country's better off in, you know, so many different ways. It is pretty astounding. You know, it's why I'm a conservative, to be honest, Victoria, is because I've always known conservatism works. You know, all these people in the press, I guess, jealous at the fact that I support the president, and they can't believe I support the president. And yet these policies of energy independence, less burdensome regulation, low taxes, looking out for the forgotten men and women. That's all I talk about. That's all I care about. That's what drives me. Keeping America safe and secure, border security, you know, getting us away from this socialist utopia that the Democrats now envision, making the world a safer place. Better trade deals is great for America, great for our farmers, great for our manufacturers, great for workers. That's who I identify with. Anyway, welcome aboard, Victoria. You are on the team here, thank goodness, because it's going to be a tough uphill 2 years. It's going to be a fight every day. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Paul is in Pennsylvania. Paul, hi. How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Sean, you're a great American. It is great to talk to you. I want to go back to the Cohen testimony and just believe that there should be another charge of lying to Congress brought on him. Because early in his testimony, he said that President Trump ran with no intention of winning as a PR stunt. Later in his testimony, he says that he knows he colluded with Russia but can't prove it. Those two statements can't exist in the same space. One or both has to be a lie.
Well, look, I think anybody that was around the president at the time, then candidate at the time, and I was a lot, he wanted to win. You know, nobody would go on that. Nobody would travel like he did and put the energy in as he did, especially in those closing days, weeks, and months, if you don't want to win. That's not even in his DNA that this is a great marketing opportunity. I just don't see it. I don't think this president got in for any other reason but to win. And to change the country. And he did win. And there were only a few of us that were telling you, yeah, it's a possibility he can win this. And others were like, no way. Ha, ha, ha. Donald Trump, please get in. Please get in. Now they just want to destroy him any way they can. We'll go to Jennifer is in California, the socialist utopia of California. Free health care coming for all. Legal, illegal, from California, not from California. Gavin Newsom has put up a sign saying, come here for your health care for free. Jennifer from California. How are you, Jennifer?
Hi. I'm actually from Canada.
Jennifer from Canada. Welcome aboard. Yeah.
Thanks. So I'm a single parent with a child with a disability. And I just want, what I want to stress with this, with the socialism aspect of it for Americans, is I have no choice. I am constantly on the phone advocating for my daughter, advocating for choice, advocating for different tests that I can't get approved for. And the cycle will be that once I do get the testing from the medical profession and they make their recommendations of what she needs to be better in school, I have to go to the school and now fight with them because the school won't agree with what they're saying. And it's just constant. And it's always like that. And I'm actually a nurse. And right. I left healthcare because I couldn't stand it anymore. And I became an electrician. So I went to the trades and I love it. But
let me guess, that you enjoyed helping people as a nurse, right? But it now became untenable because of socialized medicine and the burden of work that they're putting on you for the little amount of money that they can pay because it's all controlled is not worth it.
Correct.
And I bet you make a lot more as an electrician. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And I enjoy it. And there's less policy. There's less of it. But I guess my question to you would be is I feel like I'm a constitutional conservative, like but I have no choice. I'm stuck using what I have. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like,
I do.
If I paid and went to the States and paid for everything that I needed to get my daughter what she needed to be successful, I would bring that information back to Canada and I'd be no further ahead because they would throw their hands up in the air and say, sorry, like, we don't understand this, or she's not bad enough, or she doesn't fit this category or this category to get what you need to support her. So I guess when you are thrown these obstacles and roadblocks constantly as a parent, as a professional, it's very, very draining. And I just can't, I would just stress that as long as you have choice and less government and less policy, you have to hang on to that. You just can't let it go.
I don't care if it's a National Health Services, single payer in Canada. There's a reason many Canadians come to the United States and freely choose to pay for the health care they get here. There is a reason that, you know, if you look through K-12 education in America, that we rank somewhere, you know, depending reading or math, you know, in the high 20s and 30s. And there's a reason, and we pay more per capita per student is because the government can't run anything like this well. They destroyed our VA system. Thankfully, it's being rebuilt now. We had veterans dying a year later after they had requested care. There's nothing the government does that they're going to do well. They don't understand how free markets actually work. It has brought us to this innovative point with technology and advancement in medicines. Because people are incentivized to do it. They're taking all of that incentive away and they're controlling it themselves. In its best form, it's going to be low mediocrity, you know, not excellence. Yeah. It's never going to bear excellence because there's no incentive to bear excellence from people.
That's exactly right. And I mean, our First Nations are suffering so bad with our healthcare system because they're supposed to have top-notch healthcare in Canada and they do not have it. And in fact, I found myself advocating for them a lot more and I got nowhere. I couldn't go anywhere. It's sad. It is so sad and it is so frustrating. And, you know, and then Trudeau goes and gives $50 million to Venezuela.
Unbelievable.
By the way,
Trudeau's numbers are down in like the 20s. I hear he's really dying there. So, well, listen, it's a good admonition, and we get the same admonition from others as well. And we really appreciate you calling in and trying to warn people and tell people exactly what's coming if these people win the day. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We are going to actually just lay down and show you tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern Fox News Channel, exactly what this new radical extreme Democratic Socialist Party is all about. This new adoption of bludgeon, destroy, and bloody up Trump at the expense of doing anything for the American people. They don't have a single agenda item that they have any interest in passing but for the insane, radical New Green Deal and how most of them are going along with that insanity as well. And news you won't get anywhere else. Big show, 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News. Great to be back in the United States. There's no place like home. Click, click, click. That I can tell you. And we'll see you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.